welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our multi-county listening area in central Iowa. I am Susan Franz and your host for this post-Thanksgiving program. We're feeling especially thankful this year for the outpouring of support we have received in our membership drive thus far. We are more than halfway to being able to match the $25,000 challenge from dedicated members, but we have quite a way to go toward our goal of 50 new members. Does this mean that most of you listening are already members? Or does it mean that we have to find ways to reach more new listeners? If you're already a member or have renewed your membership, we thank you. If you have suggestions about ways we could better serve our listening area, we'd appreciate a call at 515-292-2878 or stop by the station at 410 Douglas. For me, these weeks with the Pledge Drive have included some extra live programs. Programs that we didn't rebroadcast three times the same day as we usually do. I was particularly impressed by the variety and quality of the poetry in some of those shows. This was more than people reading their poems on the air. These were ways that ordinary people could discover the joys of writing. Soon, we'll hear from Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms about the crowdsourced poetry project, Iowa Bird of Mouth. Then, we'll hear about the poetry group Third Stanza, as well as from three students from Mark Royer's class at Edwards School. And we'll start today's program with an interview with a poet who has just published his first book of short stories. This is Dennis Mowsby, who began to write poetry when he returned from Vietnam as a way to deal with the trauma. Not surprisingly, the Vietnam experience still informs his short stories. Reporter Kay Puttock brings us this interview.
And now let's talk about your book, or your forthcoming book, which you've just received the galleys for, book of short stories called Free Fire Zone.
Yes, this is my second commercially published book. The first one was a book of poetry called Near Death, Near Life, and both of these books are published by Prolific Press out of the East Coast. In fact, talk about haiku, that's what they originally did. For years, they ran haiku and tanka journals. And I submitted to them, and several years ago, they sent out a notice to everybody that they'd published and said, hey, we're going to start doing books. Send us your manuscripts. So I sent them two manuscripts. One was the manuscript of poems, which they printed and published, and the second was a book of short stories. They agreed to do that as well, and so now we're doing the galleys, and we're just about, I think I've done about 200 pages of galleys, and we got another 100 pages to go. Mm-hmm. And then we have to discuss a cover and, you know, some other things, and hopefully it'll be published and it'll be available sometime in December.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Now, talking of covers, now you said you've had one book published. Did you have much say over the cover, or did you get an unpleasant surprise when you saw them?
In a commercially published book, the publisher normally has the final say mm-hmm. on the cover.
So you don't get any input.
Well, you do get some input. He sent me cover art and explained what it was and said he thought this fit the content of the book really well. And I took a look at it and said, gosh, you know, that's right. I mean, that looks great.
Oh, good.
It was an original oil painting by a Bulgarian artist. And it's got a sun, a half sun, and you've got kind of a desiccated body of a female wearing a gas mask. And then the intent is that the book is called Near Death, Near Life. The sun is, of course, a symbol of life. A woman's body is a symbol of life. The gas mask is a symbol of death, and the body was kind of desiccated because it's caught between death and life. And so I thought the symbolism
idea is she's being gassed.
Well, she's got a gas mask on, so it's
she wouldn't have been gassed.
No, probably not. But she's still affected by the conflict between war, life and death, war and
Ryan.
And life. Ryan. And the colors of the book, the cover. They picked them from the U.S. Army color palette because a lot of the poetry in it is war poetry. And so you have the olives and the golds and stuff that you would, you know, sometimes you would see on trucks painted for different parts of the world and camouflage, you know, uniforms and so on. But I didn't even know the Army had a color palette. But they do. So,
you know, I've got – I must have been – I was born in 42 and the war was over by 45. So the oldest I could have been is three. But I have a memory of my mother getting out gas masks and showing them to my – so that if we needed them – because, in fact, they didn't use gas, at least not much if they did use it at all in the Second World War. But they were scared that they would. And we had gas masks in case of this emergency.
Yeah.
And my mother must have been getting them out to – well, I remember she was like, you know, these are nothing to be afraid of. Let's try them on and so on. So,
yeah, I remember seeing some documentaries where they were showing news clips of British movie house where they would have have news clips and before you saw the regular movie. And they showed people of all ages, including – and even babies had kind of a canister you put them in.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a mask, but it was like a sealed canister. You could put your baby in with a clear plastic window. You had the family dog had a little gas mask you could put on it.
Okay. So – Back to this present book, though. Free Fire Zone, that sounds as if it's something to do with battles, too.
Right. I'm a Vietnam veteran. And so the 16 stories in here, they're all fiction. But, of course, they're based on my experience in Vietnam and also the aftermath of Vietnam. And the stories are what they call linked short stories, which means they have some common threads that run through them, and one of which is the hero or the protagonist, that he is in or mentioned in or has something to do with each one of the stories. And there's some other threads that are common to it. But basically what it – you pick him up when he's in his 20s and he's in Vietnam. And there are several of the stories initially where he is involved in battles or other particular types of things. And then you also have stories about him when he's back. And up to the time, the last story is when he's 70 years old, you know, and so he's looking back on, you know, his family's participation in the various wars. You know, his grandfather was in World War II, his father was in Korean War, and he was in Vietnam, and so he's looking back at all this.
When you say he's looking back, you mean he stops being the narrator or he stops being a first-person narrator?
He thinks about the stories that his father and grandfather told him about their participation in the wars. And those stories, the initial part of the story blends into a flashback where you actually have a tiny little piece of fiction that talks about with the father and the grandfather as the main character and, you know, of course, in their stories.
Okay. And the main character, if you can call him that, the one that's in Vietnam, is he a first-person narrator? Or?
Some of the stories are first-person. Some are not.
But even the ones that are about him, are they different? Does it switch the narrative mode?
Some of them do. Again, he's in all of them or something that he has done has caused a story generated. Now, this was also a learning experience for me as it was a transition. This was my transition book from poetry into fiction into prose. And so each story is introduced by a poem, a mood poem that gives you the mood of the story before you even get into it. And then each of the stories is a different genre. You know, the first story is a murder mystery. The second story is a gothic horror. And you have a sci-fi story and a western and, you know, a crime story and a thriller and, you know, so on and so on. Each of the stories is a slightly different genre. So it was my attempt to treat these stories as etudes, as studies, you know, so I could master or at least immerse myself in each of these genres that people, you know, like to read.
That's got a sort of 19th century and earlier feeling about it too, because that was quite common in earlier literature. People would have epigraphs, little poetic epigraphs at the beginning of chapters often or sections. And that sounds very similar.
Yep. Well, hopefully it'll get you in the mood for each story.
Right.
Maybe it'll be a palate cleansing kind of thing, you know, as you go from one genre to the other.
Okay. Would you like to talk about any one particular story?
I can give you a few paragraphs out of one of the stories, if you like.
That'd be very nice.
This is in Vietnam. The monsoon rain beat at the men. Great gray pillars of rain stomped over the land. The triple canopy jungle surrounding the patrol never got dry. Water trickled off millions of exposed plant surfaces to make a background noise unique to the season and place. One could hear the percussion drops landing on leaves, sounding like 1,000 brushed snare drums. Water fell on the top foliage, then dripped downward from leaf to leaf, accumulating until one heard the thrup, thrup, thrup noise of rivulets slapping the spongy, rotting jungle floor. Flesh could take the constant soaking, but standard GI-issue battle dress and leather boots rotted out after 3 months. So far, it had been one of those usual patrols. No sign of the enemy. One man took a punji stick in his calf from a pit trap. Two others hauled him back, reducing the group to 9. The remaining men dealt with a damp misery with thoughts of family or girlfriends or the chance the next mail call would bring something good. Everyone off in his own little world, lulled by the drumming, drumming, drumming of the rain. The dreams were better than reality, but not being alert in the here and now could get you killed. It happened fast, the detonation of a mine blasting air and steel balls down the trail, sweeping away Sergeant Brandt and the 2 18-year-old privates in the lead, then the crazy roar of automatic weapons, a confetti of bullet-shredded plants, showered skin, clothes, and the falling, jerking bodies of the dying.
Now, I suppose that was something else, aside from all the terrible things that were happening that human beings were doing. There's the weather.
Yeah, oh yes. I don't think movies or documentaries even give you the full taste of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they might tell you that the temperature was such and such, or you can see snow, you know, but they don't give you the smell of it, the taste of it, you know, mm-hmm. the actual what's assaulting your nerves, your nerve endings.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can't get that.
And you can't probably get out of it because you've got dwellings or.
And, you know, and when you put in the weather and other non-combat things like sickness and accidents, I mean, these people have to fight anyway. There's no choice. They don't have a choice. You know, they can't go home and lay in bed if they've got a cold or pneumonia or whatever, you know, or if they've got a wound. You know, if there's a battle raging, they've got to fight. I mean, they can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have a certain, a tolerance that, you know, sometimes your training conditioning help with, but sometimes not. And certainly, you know, civilians don't understand that. I mean, there's no way to understand it unless you have to go through it.
Right.
I mean, maybe somebody going through a marathon, you know, that maybe they would get a little close to that, you know, where you hit the wall and you have to keep on going anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Or die, you know.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Dennis Mousby telling about his first book of short stories, Free Fire Zone, that grew out of his experiences in Vietnam. Now we turn to a new and unusual way to create poetry. You'll hear from Dennis again as a poet. First, however, we'll hear from Jennifer Knox, curator of Iowa Bird of Mouth, a crowdsourced poetry project, and Tyler Harms, director of Iowa Young Birders. Hello, Jennifer and Tyler.
Hello, Susan.
Jennifer, could you tell us what crowdsourced poetry is?
Crowdsourced poetry is a poem that it lives in a space that anyone can contribute and is encouraged to contribute to it. So our crowdsourced poetry project lives at iowabirdofmouth.com, and every month there is a different spotlight bird meant to inspire people, and people can contribute from anywhere in the world. They don't have to be in Iowa, and all you have to do is go to the site and hit the submit button, and the submission window will come up, and you could type in your submission. You can add your name to the contributors list, or you can choose to be anonymous. We've had about 100 contributors so far, so that is very exciting.
Now, is that since the project began?
Yes.
And when did it begin?
It began August 1st.
What was the first bird?
I'm going to let Tyler talk about that.
Sure. Thanks, Jennifer. So our first bird was the American goldfinch, and that represented the month of September. And it was the goldfinch, as everyone is very familiar, is the state bird of Iowa. But it's also a very good bird to represent September because that's often when goldfinches are starting to build their nests in Iowa. So a very appropriate bird for the month of September.
So they build their nests in the fall.
They are a late nesting species relative to the other songbirds in Iowa, and the reason for that is because they rely very heavily on thistle seeds, thistle plants, and it's in the late summer and early fall when these thistle plants start to produce their seeds, and if anybody's seen a thistle seed before, it has kind of the little feathery end to it, and they rely very heavily on those seeds, and so they're timed perfectly with the production of those seeds.
I see a little irony here. As the Iowa bird survives on Iowa noxious weed, is that right?
That is right. There are some thistle plants that are native to the state, but most are considered noxious weeds, yes. So it's a little bit ironic indeed.
Yes, that's
opportunists.
Yes. So, and of course, if they eat enough of those seeds, I suppose that reduces the population of thistles, right?
Sure, yeah.
They'd have to eat a lot of seeds.
They would indeed.
And that was your first month. And what did you have that season? September, October?
So October was the ring-necked pheasant. Again, a very familiar bird in the state, a very colorful bird, very noticeable on the Iowa landscape. We often see them out roaming around on the gravel roads on the rural countryside. And as we talked about last month, ringneck pheasants are a very important bird to Iowa economically because they're a game species. They're hunted in the state. And so many individuals spend a lot of dollars right here in Iowa to hunt pheasants. And so they're an important bird to the state for other reasons.
And that's another irony because they are not native.
Correct. That is correct. They are not native. Introduced in the early 1900s.
And actually, you sent a poem that refers to that, I believe. And would you like to read it? Or
I think I'll let Jennifer read that.
I'll read it. This is a verse from Poem for the Ringneck Pheasant. The reporter stands in the hurricane chamber. This is a Category 3, he wheezes, skin pulling from his face. I am in Iowa, where there are no hurricanes, but where a windstorm brought us the ringneck pheasant. I'm waiting for a windfall of money. I don't care where it comes from, where it blows in from. Some of my neighbors say they'd never take Illinois money, but how would they know? Isn't that funny?
And this was created by more than one person?
This was created, I think, by a single contributor.
Okay.
But we do have several verses that are created by groups. I just visited with the Clark County Arts Council in Osceola, and together we crowdsourced a verse right there in our meeting for the American Crow, which is this month's spotlight bird, and it was very fun. And our latest contribution on the poem for the crow came from a brownie troop in Des Moines. Yay!
Well, and at the end of this conversation, you'll hear one from Dennis Mousby because his haiku, which won first place in the haiku division of Lyrical Iowa, is about crows.
And what a coincidence.
And so,
great transition.
Is there anything else that you want to say about give your website? We'll definitely have it on ours.
It's www.iowabirdofmouth.com. And we invite you to share your words on the crow, either your individual words or your words created in a group. It's a lot of fun. We have an amazing list of contributors, some very renowned poets, including National Book Award nominees. So if you've never been published, it is a great place to put your words and to be in terrific company.
Well, it sounds like a fun...
Can you contribute to this here in Iowa, or can they do it from anywhere in the world?
They can do it from anywhere in the world. And we have a lot of ex-Iowa Pats who have contributed to the poem, and it's their way of sharing their memories of Iowa and memories of the wildlife here.
So somebody could be somewhere else but grew up in Iowa and then...
Absolutely, from all over the world.
No, they don't have to grow up in Iowa.
Well, I mean, it's just basically they're... business or their life has taken them someplace else.
Your husband? I was thinking about Chris.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
And maybe he could invite somebody else.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like if you know of a poet or somebody that's really has that in their heart, this is a way, let them know about this site.
And birds, too. There's something about the connection between Iowans and birds, which inspired me to create the project. So birders can contribute to this. Writers can contribute to this. There's a lot of different loves working on this site. And
well, the Sand Creek Diaries probably helped contribute to that.
I'm sure.
And what we've always said, too, Jennifer, is birds are everywhere.
They're everywhere.
You know, this month in particular with the American crow, I mean, it's one of the most cosmopolitan birds in North America. It's widespread from coast to coast. So,
so fun.
Everyone gets to see an American crow.
You don't have to be from Iowa to write about crows.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So we'd like to hear Dennis's poem now.
Crows wing roll through smoke across a field of parched grass. Red-hoofed fire gallops. So any Iowans that have ever seen a farmer burning off his field or a field that's caught on fire from the spark of a tractor's exhaust, you know,
So the surprise in the last line is the fire compared to a galloping animal.
It takes you into – you have the vision of the crow wing rolling through smoke, and then you have a field of parched grass. So you've got the location and some motion, and then you get the little aha moment. It explains the fire galloping across this field.
Now, I haven't seen that many fields burning. I have seen a few because my husband's an agronomist, and some of the plots that he was doing, he used to fire them. But do you often see crows coming up out of the
occasionally you see a lot of birds that are in front of the fire because it's driving insects out.
Right.
And so they're having a good time feeding.
Oh.
Depends on the time of year. After the first frost, there weren't many insects around. But, of course, in the old days when Iowa was tall grass prairie, you had prairie fires. That was why there's no trees here. You know, the trees were burned out, but the plants that had adapted had very deep roots, and they survived the fire. And so the prairie needed the fire or it would cease to exist. Mm-hmm. So fire is a part of Iowa's, you know, rural heritage.
Right, right. So the crows, are we meant to assume that the crows are there after the insects also?
Yeah.
Do you know what this reminds me of? I don't know if this is an irrelevant association, but in Anglo-Saxon poetry, you often hear battles, people drawing up ready for battles, and then crowds of crows gathering over the because they'd seen so many battles that they knew there were going to be dead bodies.
Yes. And crows, in fact, were one of the few flying predators or vulture-like cleanup crew that we had here in Iowa until we reintroduced the turkey buzzard. You know, and now they're getting some competition from the turkey buzzard. So,
this is KHOI Community Radio, and we have been with Jennifer Knox, curator of Iowa Bird of Mouth, a crowdsourced poetry project, and Tyler Harms, director of Iowa Young Birders. Next, we'll play their theme song, The Elephant and the Tiger, written by Brian Dudley and performed by his group, Strong Like Bear.
Very, very different.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and we've been learning about Iowa Bird of Mouth, the crowdsourced poetry project featuring The Crow, November's Bird of the Month. Since we're almost at the end of November, you may want to know December's Bird of the Month is the Screech Owl. So get ready. Our transition music was The Elephant and the Tiger, or Birds of a Feather, written by Brian Dudley and performed by his band Strong Like Bear. Now we'll turn to some more conventional poetry writing with the local poets whose work will be included in the annual publication of the Iowa Poetry Association, Lyrical Iowa. Dennis Mousby will introduce this story.
The IPA, the Iowa Poetry Association, has been around for a very long time, as you might suspect, you know, given Iowa's high literacy rate and appreciation for poetry. But they started in the 40s, and now this edition of Lyrical Iowa is the 71st annual edition. And this year they received 2,150 entries into their contest, and only 351 out of those 2,150 made it into the book. And out of those, there were several categories. There was a general category. There was humorous verse, sonnets, national world events, and haiku, and poems for children. And that was for the adults. Mm-hmm. And then there were student entries from college, high school, also fifth through eighth grade, and K mm-hmm. through four. And Ames did very well out of 351 entries. People from Ames. There were 22 people that made it into the book. Four of those won awards, and the remainder made it into the book without award, were published. And then there were two students that received awards. There was Chantel Eulenstein from Edwards Elementary in third grade. She won a third place award in the K through four category. And also Lisa Graw won a third honorable mention, who's also from Edwards Elementary. So in the student side, the teacher has to send in, submit the poems.
Mm-hmm.
So or their teacher at the third grade in Edwards is doing a good job with poetry.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Dennis Mousby from the poets group Third Stanza. We'll soon be hearing from a few of those whose poetry was chosen for the 2016 edition of Lyrical Iowa. This is one of those special programs that Local Talk can bring you, because we're local. Dennis mentioned the third grade teacher, Mark Royer, who's, I believe all of these students were his students. But I'd like to read an email that he sent me this morning. I am so excited you were promoting this opportunity for the girls. My daughter, Maggie, appeared on one of your radio shows a few years back when she won a national gold medal in the Scholastic Arts and Writing Contest. She's been a bit of an inspiration for me because of her poetry, so I'm always very eager to promote such a wonderful form of self-expression to my students. And maybe that explains why every one of the students that we have here was Mr. Royer's student in the third grade at Edwards.
Maybe we should talk to our students now. Alyssa and Chantal and Madeline. I understand that this was a class assignment that your teacher gave you. Is that right? Do you do a lot of these kinds of writing assignments for Mr. Royer?
I think that was mostly I think that was one of the only ones that we did, but now I'm in sixth grade, so I don't have him anymore.
Okay. Do you ever do writing in sixth grade classes
mm-hmm.
too?
Yeah.
I think it's marvelous that for a class assignment, so many of you got published in Lyrical Iowa. Let me try doing this by addressing each of you individually. Chantal, were you surprised when you heard that your poem was accepted?
Yes, I was.
What's your poem like? What is it about?
It's about snowflakes. We were assigned to do a poem on snowflakes. So
all of them are poems on snowflakes?
Yes.
Now, Madeline, was this the first poetry assignment that Mr. Royer gave you?
Yeah.
And did you all have your poems entered in the Lyrical Iowa contest?
I had one of them.
So you wrote several, is that right?
I think I wrote three.
You wrote three of them. And Was it Mr. Royer who decided which poems were going to be sent to the...
I don't think so. I think it was...
So all of them may have gotten sent, and they are the ones who chose it. I see. Okay. Alyssa, what about you? How many poems did you write for the assignment?
Six or seven.
Okay. Were you... Chantal, I'll ask you this again. Were you asked to do these only in class, or did you do them when you were at home, too?
We worked on them only when we were in class.
Ah. So, Madeline, how long did this assignment happen? Was it just a week, or did you spend a lot of days on it?
Probably about a week.
Okay. So you folks turned out a lot of material in just a week, right? I think perhaps we should have them read their poems.
Yes.
Okay. So let's start with you. Alyssa, do you have your poem with you?
Yeah.
Or you maybe know it by heart.
I already know it.
Oh, great. Would you please tell us, say your poem for us?
My poem is called Time Machine. If I could build a time machine and go back in time, I would go to when planets were born and make a planet all mine.
Ah, very nice. Very nice. Madeline, what about you? Can you tell us your poem?
Yeah. So my poem is called Memories. My memories are the biggest part of me. If you took them away, I would be nothing, sitting alone in the dark, never trying.
Wonderful. You know, both of those poems, and I'm sure Chantal's will be the same, are the kind of thing that you want to consider, you want to think about. And there are just lots of thought there. So, Chantal, will you read us your poem?
My poem is called Snowflake. Snowflake, sparkly, unique, dazzling, twirling, whirling, tucking earth in bed, shimmering diamonds.
Oh. Thank you all so much, Alyssa and Chantal and Madeline, for joining us today.
Yeah.
And I really hope you keep writing. You do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We just heard from three students at Edwards School who were in the third grade when they wrote the poems you just heard. They are Madeline Wade, Alyssa Graw, Chantal Uhlenstein. They had to leave us to return to class, but we are so proud to be able to showcase their charming poems. And we are also proud to have a teacher like Mark Royer who understands the value of providing the opportunity for young students to be encouraged to write poetry. I'm sure there are other such dedicated and imaginative teachers who might introduce poetry into their lesson plans, and I hope we've inspired some of them. I have to admit that I was proud that Mr. Royer was inspired by his daughter's appearance on KHOI. That is the sort of thing we can do on truly local radio. And now, let's get back to Mary Richards talking with some of the poets from Third Stanza.
Well, it's time to introduce all our guests here today. All of these people, as we said before, have had poems published in Lyrical Iowa for 2016. So, and we'll be asking them to read their poems so that you'll get a flavor of the kinds of things they do. And all of the people that who I'm going to introduce are also members of a Third Stanza. And first person I'll introduce is Maggie Westfold. Maggie, I'm going to ask you to tell the people about Third Stanza, what that is.
Okay, thank you, Mary. Third Stanza is a society of Ames poets. We've been together between 15 and 20 years. It's a working writers group, almost always poetry, a little bit of memoir or narrative. We meet at the public library the third Wednesday of every month, 6 o'clock. Anyone is welcome to come join us. We are gentle with our comments and critiquing. You don't have to be critiqued. You may just share. Some of us do that quite often, actually. It was a spinoff of an Ames High night school class, a poetry class taught by a master's student from Iowa State that went on for many years, and this group is a spinoff when that opportunity came to an end. So
well,
that's how we started.
That's great. And we have a long-lived institution of creativity. Our other people who are here today from Third Stanza are Jean Dow. And our next person is Deb Lewis. Deb, do you want to introduce yourself by saying what you do as a day job?
I am the curator of the Ada Hayden Herbarium at Iowa State University. So I am a botanist.
And does that influence the kind of poetry you write?
It certainly does. I use poetry in one sense to kind of escape the constraints of scientific writing, but I find myself in another way actually falling into form-type poetry like haiku, where unless it's free-range haiku, it is made up of 17 syllables.
Okay, and the last person from Third Stanza that I'm going to introduce is Ann Hudalainen. Anne, tell the audience where you're from and how you happened to get involved in Third Stanza.
Well, my husband and I, we moved 4 years ago from Russia, and we are enjoying Ames and all the community. And I always liked poetry, and I was delighted to find out that there is a group here. You can just, you know, come and share your poems. And I was very shy at first, but then, as Maggie said, they were really gentle, so that's why it also encouraged me to write more.
When Susan and I talked about this program, we talked about some general questions that we might ask everybody, and we could start with Deb. When did you write your first poem?
I think I wrote my first poem when I was an undergraduate living in Arkansas.
And was your undergraduate degree in botany also?
It was, but I actually started out as an English major.
Ah.
I was thinking I would go into technical writing, but in some of those English classes, it was also writing poetry, fiction, and other forms of writing.
So was the first poetry that you wrote as a result of an assignment, or was it something that you just felt?
I think it probably was an assignment, but once I tried it, I remember writing some poems otherwise that were just not related to my class.
So the assignment was just a matter of priming the pump?
I think that's right, yes.
So would you read your poem? Please.
I will. It is a haiku. Ancient compass plant points toward future. Cradles cocoon on silk thread.
Ah. And I should say that I know that Deb often uses a haiku form, and she writes in that form very effectively. In fact, Deb, why don't you tell the listening audience, I suppose most of them already know, but tell them what the haiku form is.
A haiku is typically made up of 17 syllables. It's a Japanese form of poetry, as you may have heard from Dennis Malsby, who is our kind of haiku master in Third Stanza and has offered workshops and probably will continue to do so on haiku. But it's typically three lines, 17 syllables, and the last line is reflective of the first two lines in some way or other. So sometimes those first two lines are down, and then the third line takes a right-hand turn or something.
And sometimes it's a total surprise.
Yes,
that third
it is
line.
Often a total surprise.
And so it's generally five syllables, seven syllables, and then five syllables.
That's correct. Yes.
I guess that would say classical haiku.
Yes.
There are lots of other forms, I think,
right.
of haiku, but
right.
that's the classical.
Actually, I do have a little recorded bit from Dennis on haiku.
Shall we do that now?
This is a haiku, and the Lyrical Iowa requires that it be the traditional American haiku. And is described as follows. It's three lines. The first line has to be five syllables. Second line, seven syllables. And the third line is five syllables. So it's 5-7-5, three lines. And, of course, this is a variation off the Japanese poem, also called a haiku. The haiku also is traditional, and somewhere in the poem you must get a feeling for what season it is. And, of course, the traditional haiku is normally describes the relationship of humans to nature. So they require those items in order to qualify for the contest.
Now, just briefly about the other kinds of haiku. There are a lot of different.
Yes, there's been. But the haiku is a very popular form of poetry, been around for well over 1,000 years, and its predecessor for another 400 years before that. And many of those haiku from those years and years ago, those centuries ago, have survived because the Japanese imperial court had a contest every year, and they recorded those. So there's books, I think there's one or two books from those years that you can get here at the Ames Library.
Oh, so you can see some of these
traditional
ones.
It's gotten to be very popular, and you'll find haiku groups all over the world. Haiku magazines all over the world. So if you care to go to Google and put in haiku, you're going to be really amazed at how many different countries have haiku groups and like haiku. The source haiku has evolved. Like I said, the original haiku was supposed to be human interacting with nature. They've got out of that came a version of it called a senryu, and the senryu is a lot more gritty and it's more humorous, and it actually is more about human foibles. So they can be really
okay.
It can be nasty or it can be funny.
Uh-huh. Now, people, yeah. I think, have the idea, perhaps, if they haven't written many of these themselves, that this is an easy form to write because it's short, perhaps.
Oh my! You have, of course, you have a limited number of syllables, a limited number of lines. There's no title. You cannot have a title, so you can't give a little hint of what's going to come, you know, through the title. The first two lines are supposed to kind of take you in and give you a place, feeling of place, a location. And the last line is supposed to be an aha moment or a little surprise. And whether it's a senryu or a haiku or some other variations, there's more variations now. There's even some haiku magazines that will not accept 575, traditional American haiku. And some haikus are maybe one or two lines now, mm-hmm. but they have to have the same kind of bringing you into the poem and then giving you a little surprise or
so
a shock.
It's not so easy to do well.
Not so easy.
But the only kind of haiku that the lyrical eye will accept is the traditional American haiku.
Traditional American haiku.
575.
Yeah, any contest that you might want to submit your haiku to, or there's haiku journals, you need to read their submission guidelines really carefully, because in some they do not want the American traditional American haiku, others they do. So,
okay, so let's hear your untitled.
Okay, this is a first place haiku. Crows wing roll through smoke across a field of parched grass. Red-hoofed fire gallops.
And that's Dennis's haiku. We have Maggie Westfold, who has not been heard from yet.
Maggie, how often do you write? Do you write regularly? That is, do you sit down and I mean, some people will sit down and write first thing in the morning or last thing before they go to bed at night. Mm-hmm. And some people, there will be weeks in between times that they write. What's your schedule?
That's me. I'd love to say that every morning. I write early morning mostly. And I'd love to say every day, but it doesn't happen. And I've been through a couple spells where, like recently, I haven't been writing a lot. And something about 2 weeks ago spawned a poem, and I felt so good about that because of not writing. I don't like when I'm not writing. So,
speaking of writing every day, have you ever done the challenge? I think it's in April, mm-hmm. Poetry Month, the mm-hmm. challenge of writing a poem every day for a whole month. Have you ever done that?
I have. I've done that for 4 years in a row, and I hope to say this time next year I did it again. April Writer's Digest online, that's the one I do. They give you a prompt every day. You attempt to put something out. I've been known to cheat, pull out an old poem that fits. But it's a fun thing to do. I remember who had to go and move to Wisconsin, Linda Voigt, got me hooked on that. The first year I was ready to strangle her because it is addictive and it's troublesome. You got to put something out for 30 days in a row. But I love that and I recommend it.
So could we hear the poem that was accepted in the Lyrical Iowa?
I didn't bring it. I brought you one that was published a few years ago that is dear to my heart, and I'll read that one for you if that's
please
all right.
Do.
This was following the death of a wonderful friend, died in 2001, Tamalu Moss. She lived in Ames for many years, and I worked with her. About 2 months after her death, I went to Cedar Falls to visit her husband and just sit and visit and talk about Tamalu. And I wrote this in the days after I got home. It's called Singing Tamalu. Beyond the window, a low rock cluster, a pie pan perched for rainwater, for twittering chickadees to sip. From her portrait in red on the wall, eyes like dark diamonds shone as if she would soon speak.
He shared 34 years of shoebox photos, her poems in praise of his passion for roses, for Bass. 7 love letters scripted on soft pink linen she'd tucked in the folds of the navy dress he most loved to see her in. He sang her name for hours, let the sound of her roll cross his lips. Tamaloo, Tamaloo, Tamaloo. Lifted strands from her necklace tree, lapis, pearls, and malachite, his gifts for his precious gem. He listened to my sadness and my joy. Let a sister friend lament in harmony with the one who knew her best and loved her most.
Mm.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. And it's a very unusual way of framing that when you put it in, you know, from the husband's point of view rather than yours. I think that's just beautiful.
When I left, he said, thank you for letting me sing about my Tamaloo for the whole afternoon. And it was easy to write. That was our afternoon.
That was your conversation. What I said is the way we spent our time. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you remember what your first poem ever was? First poem you ever wrote?
I don't remember exactly which one it was, but when I went over to Iowa City that year, I had been writing farm poems because I grew up on the farm. And the instructor, and I have no idea now who that was, but a group of 20 people, and he hands out my poem to every one of these people. And he spent 2 hours talking about that poem. And it had a place. It had everything he was looking for. Well, so that sent me on my way with writing farm poems. And so I just wrote poems about the farm. I was in shock. As I sat there, I didn't even know, you know, you had to send over 5 poems before the class ever started.
Okay, well, let me go back a little bit before that class. You said you'd always written farm poems. So how old were you when you wrote your first one? Can you remember?
Oh, I don't think I wrote poetry before I retired. I was busy doing art.
So really, the poetry for you has been a later-in-life acquisition, then?
We've just been talking with Jean Haggar-Tau, who started writing poetry after she retired. Now let's turn to one of the youngest poets in the group, Anne Hudelainen, who will be talking with Mary Richards about how she writes poetry.
You grew up in Russia, so did you particularly read Russian poets that we would be familiar with?
Well, of course, living in Russia, you can't not to read poetry because, you know, we have a treasure of poets and they're world famous. So, of course, do you want it or not, you will absorb all of it. So, yes, I would say so. But here is the place where I actually started to write. So, I suppose.
So, tell me, do you write in Russian and in English, or do you prefer one or the other?
I do both, and it depends. It's actually really interesting because when you speak two languages, your brain functions differently. So it really depends. Sometimes English is more convenient for expressing my thoughts and emotions, and sometimes Russian, it could be only Russian sometimes.
Well, that's very interesting that your brain works differently depending on which language you're in.
Thank you, yes.
Well, we would like to have you share your poem that was in Lyrical Iowa. If you would do that, does it have a particular form, this poem, or is it free form?
It's a free form, New Religion. On Sunday morning, I was sitting finishing my hash browns and coffee, and suddenly something became clear to me. There is a place on earth where it doesn't matter if you're a slob or a hobo. Having kids or having Alzheimer's, no one will judge you for your past and your present. You will find this place everywhere. It is waiting for you, anytime. You'll be safe from disapproving looks. You'll donate a little bit of money to this temple of tolerance every time you come, because love is never for free. It is so sad to admit, but truly, McDonald's, I'm loving it.
Oh, thank you. That's delightful.
You've been listening to Local Talk, Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for this special post-Thanksgiving celebration, together with some very able help from Mary Richards. Thanks also to Cynthia McClure, who is the co-host for my program with Iowa Bird of Mouth. We here at KHOI are celebrating the progress we've made in just over 4.25 years of being on the air, financed primarily by listeners and staffed primarily by volunteers. Today's program was an example of the way we feature the creativity we discover and then showcase it in our locally produced programming. We started out the show with Dennis Malsby telling Kay Puttock about his forthcoming book of short stories. Then Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms introduced us to the crowdsourced poetry project, Iowa Bird of Mouth. Next, we heard from several poets whose poems will appear in the 2016 Lyrical Iowa, published by the Iowa Poetry Association. They are Jean Haggard Dow, Deb Lewis, Maggie Westfold, and Anne Hudelainen, along with Edwards Elementary students Chantal Uhlenstein, Madeline Wade, and Alyssa Grau. Mary Richards was the lively host for these conversations with her fellow poets. This program was compiled from the best of several live programs heard last week. This compilation will be broadcast at 7 p.m. this evening. You can also find it on our website, thanks to Ron Carson, who has also done the broadcasting of our performances in the Pantorium last week, the Pantorium Sessions. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was The Elephant and the Tiger, written by Brian Dudley and performed by his group Strong Like Bear. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. And by the way, during this past week, we have two people who just came in with an interest in producing new shows for us. So we're growing and healthy, and we hope you'll help us financially to improve as we stay on the air. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible, especially at this time when we have a $25,000 matching grant. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.